Would you get out a bulletin? I want to show you something before we start our lesson this morning. Did everybody get one? You know, my old science teacher kicked in here. Next weekend, Lord willing, I'm going to be working with a little congregation in southern Illinois that is right in the path of the solar eclipse. And they have invited the community to come and have me give a presentation before and after the eclipse. And so I have prepared a sheet, and I ran some extra copies for you to look at. And I hope you'll take some time next Monday to go outside and watch what's going on, because you don't get a chance to see this very often. The eclipse here will be a partial eclipse. If you want to see what produces that, it's in the upper hand, right-hand side of the sheet. What happens in an eclipse is that the bright part of the sun is covered up in the moon. Doesn't happen very often. In our case, here in this area, it'll be about 80%. And that's enough to make weird stuff happen. Dogs will howl. Cattle will head for the barn. All kinds of interesting things take place because it's abnormal. But what happens is that the light part of the sun is covered up. And so for the first time, you can see the atmosphere of the sun. And on the left-hand picture, you can see, the left-hand top picture, you can see what that is. The corona, the atmosphere on the outside, and you'll be able to see some really interesting things. Let me warn you, I've got this in the bulletin, you've heard it everywhere, but don't look at this with your naked eye, because the temperature of the corona is about 10 million degrees. The surface of the sun is only 6,000. We have no idea why that happens. But with 10 million degrees, there's X-rays and gamma rays coming from the sun, and they will damage the back of your eye. So either have special glasses that you can get that tell you they're made for the eclipse, or you can do a very simple thing which works just as well. Take a sheet of paper, put a hole in it, take another sheet of paper, and project it on the screen, the second piece. You can see more that way. It'll be larger that way. And the reason that works is because the sun is so bright. So let me encourage you, because in most of our lifetimes, this won't happen again. So it's one chance. Incidentally, tonight, I'm a science teacher. I've got to tell you this. Tonight, we're having the best person meteor shower that's happened in probably 25 years. 80 meteors a minute are supposed to take place tonight. And we're supposed to have a clear sky. So if you've never seen a really good meteor shower, when it gets dark tonight, just take 5 minutes, go outside and just take a look. And you'll see streaks of light going everywhere. The world is not ending. That has been the prediction of some. That's not what's happening. What's happening is the Earth is going through the tail of an old comet, what's left over from the comet. And so it produces all of those little streaks of light. It's very beautiful, very interesting, very unusual. And so the Lord's putting on a lot of shows for us right now. I hope you'll take advantage of them. It's free, and it's a whole lot better than what's on television. I want to talk a little bit this morning about attitude. You ever said to somebody or have somebody say to you, "I don't like your attitude"? What does that mean? Well, I went to Webster, and I looked up what attitude means. I've got some of this in your bulletin. You can follow along. We're not talking about airplanes in this case, but in point number two, one definition Webster gives of attitude is a position assumed for a specific purpose. And my question to you is, you can come to an understanding of your purpose, and that's part of your attitude. What do you understand your purpose to be? Why do you exist? What's God got in mind for you? What do you have in mind for you? That's attitude. Another definition is it's a mental position or feeling, an emotion towards a state of being. You know, your feelings are based upon what you know. Will Rogers, the American humorist, once said, "I never met a man I don't like. I just met a few I didn't understand very well." That's a good attitude. That's a good attitude. That's a mental position or feeling. We Christians need to be sure that that's part of us. Another thing Webster says is it's a negative or hostile frame of mind. Oh my, did we see that yesterday? It's hard to believe that stuff's still going on. There are people that have a negative, hostile frame of mind. And we as Christians should be those who demonstrate a complete love for all human beings. And the last one is a cool, cocky, defiant, or arrogant manner. And these, of course, violate everything Jesus taught. And we saw some of that yesterday, didn't we? We live in a time when the Christian values of attitude are important for the survival of the world, for our own relationship in the world. And so I'd like to suggest three things about attitude that Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount. And we'll be mostly drawing from Matthew, the 5th chapter, so you may want to open your Bibles to Matthew 5. Because one of the things we have to talk about is we need to develop an attitude towards ourselves. Towards ourselves. You say, what? Well, this is a practical thing to do. What's your attitude towards yourself? You know, in Matthew 5 and verse 3, Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." How do you develop an attitude towards yourself that is one that makes you poor in spirit? And let me tell you something. Now's a really good time to talk about this. Because you know what? If you go out there Monday and you look at that eclipse, there's not one single thing you can do about it. You can't control the sun. You can't control the universe. When you look at the cosmos, one of the things you have to realize is how little control you have. There's a website that NASA has. It's apod.nasa.gov. And every day they put a new picture of the cosmos. I start my day as I'm talking to God by flipping that thing up and looking at it. What an incredible God we have that can create something that big and that majestic. But you know what happens when you do that? You begin to get your own perspective, your own attitude towards self, a lot more poor in spirit. It's pretty hard to look at the incredible universe in which we live and be arrogant. I know people do it, but it's hard to do. Can you look at what you can't do and realize with God's help that you can do it? You know, Paul said in Philippians 4 and verse 11, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Don't ever say, "I can't do," because with God's help, you can do. We can develop an attitude towards self that says, "I can make a difference. My life does have purpose. I do have direction." And God just keeps opening doors for you when you do that. New things happen. People come into your life. As somebody said one time, humility is a funny thing. Just when you think you got it, you lost it. And the fact of the matter is that one of the parts of our attitude towards self is that we have to develop a realization of how insignificant we are, how humble we need to be. And so in 1 Peter 5 and verse 5, Peter says, "Submit to one another and be clothed with humility." Have I got the capacity to be humble as I deal with the world around me? You know, if I understand my insignificance, if I understand the cosmos, the magnitude of God, then it's easy for us to be people who don't radiate arrogance and selfishness. You know who our example is for that? Jesus Christ. Listen to the observation the Philippian writer made in Philippians 2 and verse 8. "Jesus made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of humans, and being in the form of a human, he humbled himself and may become obedient to his death, even the death of the cross." Have you ever stopped and just think about what Jesus did? And here's the Son of God. Here's one who can command 10,000 angels. Here's one who doesn't have to put up with the stupidity of human beings. And he comes to the earth, born of a woman and of a father who are of no significance themselves. They don't have reputation. They don't have power. He works among human beings, fights the religious establishment, fights the political establishment, and made himself of no reputation. What a model. Can you lower yourself to being the kind of servant that Jesus was? Yeah, I don't even know how to answer that question. My own human nature makes it difficult for me to put myself where I need to be as I deal with the things I see happening around me. It's so easy to let the world rub off on us. But in the next verse, Jesus in Matthew 5 and verse 4 says, "Blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted." And the word mourn here is not something like what we do when we lose somebody we love. It's not grief he's talking about. Is feeling concern for the human need. The word mourn literally means in the Greek to feel concern for the human need. Can you look at what's going on in the world around you and feel for people that you see in pain? Have we become so insensitive that we cannot respond to the needs around us? And do we not find ways to rationalize? Well, they got themselves into that. It's their fault. We tend to quote, "Whatsoever man soweth, that shall he also reap." And that's undoubtedly true. But the fact of the matter is, Jesus didn't qualify who we help by saying, if they've got what they deserve, don't help them. He doesn't say that. He says, "Blessed are they who are concerned for human need." I hope you're part of the work that this congregation is doing. I'm so proud of this group. We're such a small church. We have so many things happen. Our work, our efforts. Here we are. Have you realized it's August? We're going to be talking about coats for kids. And have you looked under the steps in the basement at what our ladies have already got ready? Well, I'm so proud of these gals. They have done a job. And with Larry's help and with those who have worked with them, we're ready to get coats on kids that don't have a coat this winter. You say, well, some of those kids don't deserve coats. That's not how Jesus put it together. He didn't say those who are worthy. You say, well, some of those kids are going to take a coat and they don't really need a coat. It's not our judgment. That's not our judgment. Our food pantry. I think we set a record last Sunday. The last time. I don't know. Maybe wrong on that. But we had the whole sheet filled up, and I haven't seen that for a while. Isn't it interesting that our food pantry serves so many people? I think, what was it, 57, Richard? 57 people we served last time. That's incredible. You say, well, not all those people needed food. Probably not. But that's not how we base the judgment of what we give help to. I would a whole lot rather give something to somebody who doesn't need it than not give something to somebody who did need it. Jesus says, "Blessed are the meek, so they shall inherit the earth." You know what meek really means? It means those who are willing to get their hands dirty. And so we're going to have a blood bank program. Why are we doing that? Because it helps the community. Because it lets people in the neighborhood know we serve. That's part of being people who are dedicated and working to build self. But the second area I'd like to call your attention is that we need to develop and improve and work on our attitude towards God. The next verse, Matthew 5, verse 6, "Blessed are they who do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." Hunger and thirst after righteousness. Let me ask you something. Have you got a search time? Is there a time in your day when you do something to strengthen yourself, to enhance your understanding? What do you spend that time on? Television? What kind of shows are you watching? Movies? What kind of movies are you watching? Books? What kind of books are you reading? Are those things that are improving your attitude towards God? Your feelings towards God? You know, the Bereans in Acts 17 and verse 11 were described. The Bible says these were more noble than those in Thessalonica in that they studied the word with all readiness of mind and searched the scriptures every day to see if it was as Paul had said. Have you ever thought about why you get a bulletin? Why do we do this? You say, well, it makes us legal. Well, yeah. But that's not the reason we do it. The reason we do it is because we try to have in the bulletin things that will challenge you and give you an opportunity to think and to grow. So I hope when you have a sermon outline, sometime during the week, you go back through this. Let me ask you something. How much of that have you used? Matthew 5, verse 8 says, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." How do you get a pure heart? Well, only as you talk to God. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands here. That might be embarrassing. But we had a sermon on prayer last Sunday. Did anything happen between last Sunday and today in your own personal life? One of the things I pushed you on last Sunday was to take some time to just get away and just you and God, nothing else. Just you and God. Talk to God in a quiet time. I'm not going to ask how many of you did that. I don't want to see a show of hands. Don't want to embarrass anybody. Don't want to embarrass myself. But I think it's important to realize that when the Bible talks about pure in heart, one way we get a pure heart is to talk to God. And the best time to talk to God is when we don't have all this other stuff going on around us. You know, I have a lot of fun with Deacon. But if I try to talk to God when Deacon's hanging around my neck, I'm not going to get much of a message to God. And isn't that true of everything in our lives? We need to find a time to get a pure heart. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Our prayer life reflects our attitude towards God. Let me encourage you to think about how we can improve our attitude towards God. And part of that is going back to the time when we talk to the Lord. And the last one I want to talk about is how do we develop an attitude towards others? This is the next verse, Matthew 5, verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, so they shall obtain mercy. And it's interesting that he ties this to forgiveness. Forgive us our debts as we forgive others, Jesus says in Matthew 6 and verse 12. Forgiveness underlies mercy. Read verses 14 and 15 of Matthew 6. You know, what's interesting is after Jesus talks about blessed are the merciful, he also talks about persecution. I wonder why those two verses are so close together. You ever think about that? Because Matthew 5 verse 9 says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called the children of God. And then it goes on and says, blessed are they who are persecuted, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. You know what happens when we try to be negotiators between people in conflict? We get attacked. Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers. But he goes right on and says, blessed are they who are persecuted. Because when you try to do what God called you to do in reaching out to others, you're going to get attacked. Be prepared for it. That's how Satan works. People are crazy. But Jesus provides a good description of crazy people. Listen to this description in Matthew 9, beginning with verse 25. When Jesus saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad like sheep, having no shepherd. That's Matthew 9, beginning with verse 25. You want to see crazy people? Turn on your television. You want to see crazy people? Look at what's happening on the world stage. We live in a crazy world. And it's easy for us to write people off and have an attitude towards them that is not one of caring, not one of loving. I'm a public school teacher. You know, I can remember times when I had kids stand screaming at me, "I hate you. I hate school. I hate life." What response did you make? You know, it took me a long time to realize that there was a time and a place to say to them, "I'm sorry, but I love you. I'm sorry, but I love you." What kind of response do you think I got when I did that? I never forget the first time I did that. Had a 285-pound football player who was really mad. And he went through this routine. I think something had happened in his sports life. And he said, "I hate you, I hate school, I hate life, I hate everything." And I looked at him, I said, "Well, I'm sorry, but I love you." You know what happened? He started crying. He started crying. Why? He told me later, he said, that's the first time anybody ever told him they loved him. "Your mom never told you she loved him?" "No." "Your dad?" "No." See, people are crazy. But Jesus, when he saw that kind of situation, he had compassion. And I love the description. "They fainted and were scattered like sheep having no shepherd." You ever see what happens when something bad happens among a bunch of sheep? They run all over the place. I've seen them run into trees. They're scattered. And Jesus took that view. That was his attitude towards others. And that passage is not qualified. It doesn't say he was concerned about those who were following him. It doesn't say he was concerned about those who were living good, upright lives. He said they were scattered like sheep, having no shepherd. Our world needs shepherds. Our world needs people who will say to the world around them, no matter who they are, no matter what their situation is, "I love you. I want to help you." You know, that's a hard attitude to nurture. Because people are crazy and it's easy to write people off. But God calls us to a higher calling than the world around us. And so we see people saying, "I hate God, I hate the creation, I hate you, I hate religion, I hate the church." What's our response? "I love you. I want to serve you. I want to help you. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are the merciful." Jesus says, develop an attitude towards others that builds and encourages and strengthens. In your prayer life, I hope that you'll pray to God to help you change your attitude towards yourself, towards God, and toward others. And if we're converted to Christ, there will be a change. Listen to Romans 6, beginning with verse 3. "Don't you know that as many of us as were baptized into Christ were baptized into his death? And we were buried with him, so that just as he was raised up from the dead by God's power, we should also live an entirely new life." See that? That's a person who's going to change their attitude towards themselves and what their purpose is and what their role is in life and what's valuable and what's important. That's a person who's going to have a different attitude towards God and understands that God has a motive and a purpose for the way he uses us and the things he does with us in our lives. That's someone who will have a different attitude towards people in the world. And when we see these awful things happening, we'll care enough to say, "I love you, I want to help you. I'm not going to judge you. I'm going to try and help you find the shepherd who will change your life." Ephesians 4, beginning with verse 22, another one of these new life passages. "For you learn that with regard to your former way of living, that you must cast off your old nature, which is corrupt and is sinking towards death. See, that's what the world is about. When you saw those hate mongers on television last night, that's what they're headed towards. They're headed towards death. And in the process, they're tearing up the lives of other people. Cast off that old nature. And listen to the rest of this passage. Again, this is Ephesians 4, starting with verse 24. And be renewed mentally and spiritually so that you are clothed with a new nature which was made by God's design for righteousness and holiness. God's design. Be renewed mentally. Be renewed in how you think, what your attitude is. Be renewed spiritually in being concerned about what really matters in life. And understand that life can be taken in a flash. This last week's been a very hard week. Just about everyone here has had death touch their lives. One of my dearest friends, Charles C. Ford, in Temple, Texas, was burning brush on her ranch. We don't know what happened, but somehow she fell into the fire and died. That's shaken me. I mean, she's the one. Her husband died 2 weeks after Phyllis died. And we spent hours on the phone together talking and trying to encourage each other. And we had plans. She's written about half of our children's books. We had plans for the future. I talked to her just 2 days ago. She's dead. She's gone. And Bill talked about this tragedy that happened with the guy burning the bees out. Last week, we had one of the guys that had been in Bill's campground that got run over by a tractor. These weren't old folkies like me. They weren't ready to die. These were young people. We need to understand that the world is sinking towards death. But we can be renewed spiritually. We can be renewed mentally. We can be clothed with a new nature. And when that happens, our attitude towards self, towards God, and towards others will change. If you're here this morning, if you're not a Christian, I beg you to understand the importance of letting God mold your life and change your attitude. You can't do it on your own. But with God's help, you can change. You can be renewed. God's Spirit can help you overcome things you would have never thought possible. And if you've done that, and if problems and struggles and the crazy people have affected your thinking, and you need our prayers to help you make a new start, we would welcome that opportunity. If in any way you're subject to the invitation of Jesus, we invite you to come. As together we stand and sing to encourage you, won't you please come?